You may have heard the news reports yesterday that Venezuela is claiming the United States has been involved in plots to assassinate its president, Hugo Chavez. Although that may strike you as improbable, keep in mind that the Bush administration has been quite open about its misgivings regarding the Venezuelan leader. On today's Underreported, a look into those allegations and why Venezuela's relationship with Cuba has caused so much alarm. Joining me now on the Leonard LoPage Show to discuss the situation is Jane Franklin, author of Cuba, Cuban Foreign Relations, A Chronology, 1959-1982, and Cuba and the United States, A Chronological History. She was also an editor and contributing editor for Cuba Update, the magazine of the Center for Cuban Studies here in New York. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here, Leonard.
Has an official complaint been made by Venezuela?
Well, they have warned the United States, or the Washington anyway, that if the assassination takes place, there will be an uprising, not just in Venezuela, but by all the people that are in solidarity with what Hugo Chavez and the Venezuelan government are now trying to do. Let's get to the root of all of this right away. For decades, there was only one country in Latin America that offered free health care to all its citizens, and now there are two. Cuba and Venezuela now have a barter arrangement in which Venezuela provides a certain amount of oil to Cuba in exchange for thousands of doctors and nurses, sports teachers, and so on, to be in Venezuela at the various missions that the Venezuelan government has created now to try to deal with the fact that 80% of its people live in poverty. So that's what's really at the root of the problem here. It's not that Washington is worried about his contacts with Cuba so much as it's worried that those contacts are carrying out the same policy of providing free health care, free education, and so on. It is an entirely different system of government, and the United States doesn't want that.
You're making it sound like an ideal situation, but obviously many people feel that Cuba is either an authoritarian or a totalitarian state, depending on how you define those terms. I know Condoleezza Rice sometimes mixes them up, but it is not exactly a utopian country. Why would that bother us so much?
Well, let's look at what Condoleezza Rice said in an October 2004 interview when she was asked, for instance, about Russia. She said, "It's a very different place than the Soviet Union. Amazing things are happening in the economy." She said, "Putin is telling people they're going to have to pay for their health care. So it's a remarkable story." Now, that's the kind of story that Washington wants to hear, that governments are privatizing, like this government wants to privatize health and education, everything else, for profits. They don't want to hear that some of these countries want to control their own destinies and really do want to provide services for their people. And whether or not you think Cuba's totalitarian or authoritarian or whatever, it's up to the Cuban people to decide what they want to do internally. And it should be up to the Venezuelan people to decide what they want to do internally.
How much of this is also about Castro being isolated? There's been an embargo in place for years, and now he is not alone if he develops these kinds of relationships with Venezuela and perhaps other countries down the line.
Well, that's right, and that's one of the things that President Chavez wants to do in Latin America. They want, both President Castro and President Chavez, want to create what is called the Bolivarian alternative for the Americans to counter the free trade area of the Americas that Washington wants to impose, which in fact does not improve the lives of the people whom it affects. They want to create a whole Latin American process for trade on this kind of arrangement that Venezuela and Cuba have now arranged. They signed an agreement in mid-December, basically knocking down all the barriers to free trade between the two countries. And now Venezuela has signed such another agreement with Brazil. It's arranged with Argentina to be the site for a television station that will broadcast what they view as the truth to Latin America rather than what they view as lies that come from the media from outside the area. The television station will be called Telesur, and it's supposed to start broadcasting within a month or two from Argentina. And meantime, let me point out that although Cuba, people keep saying it's isolated, Cuba has tremendous respect, as I'm sure you know, in Latin America. I mean, when Fidel Castro travels to Latin America, he's welcomed warmly. And in this latest conflict, which was becoming very serious between Colombia and Venezuela, it seemed that Colombia had hired some bounty hunters in Venezuela to kidnap a Colombian who is part of the guerrilla movement, and he was in Venezuela at the time, and they kidnapped him and brought him back to Colombia. And of course, President Chavez thought that was an invasion of sovereign rights in Venezuela, so there was a very serious diplomatic situation.
This is called the Granada affair, because the man who was kidnapped was Rodrigo Granada. Now, Colombia says that they're harboring revolutionaries and supporting FARC, which is trying to topple a legitimate government. Don't they have any right to defend themselves in a situation like that? We've seen any number of instances in history where people have crossed the border to capture somebody who has been fighting against them.
Yes, but the thing is that Uribe, the president of Colombia, and Chavez, the president of Venezuela, have an understanding about this, and this particular kidnapping violated that understanding. Now, what happened is Condoleezza Rice had said as early as last October that the way to deal with Venezuela would be to isolate it and get the Organization of American States to deal with it. And so almost as soon as she became Secretary of State, the State Department sent out letters to the members of the OAS asking them to take the side of Venezuela, I mean of Colombia rather, in this dispute between Colombia and Venezuela. And they didn't respond. Nobody responded. And so President Uribe turned to, guess who, President Castro of Cuba. And he asked Castro to intervene and mediate between the two before it became super serious. And so President Castro sent his foreign minister to Caracas, and the situation was mediated. And on the 15th in Caracas, President Chavez met with President Uribe, and they arranged an agreement, and they came out smiling. And President Uribe said he wanted to make it clear that President Castro played a major part in resolving the problem. So there you go. I mean, so you can't really say that Fidel Castro is isolated when people there are turning, and it's not the first time that people have turned to him to mediate international problems.
But the situation is still unresolved.
With Granda?
Yeah.
No,
oh.
It's not really. No, they had an agreement. I mean, it's not that they were harboring. He was living in a city near Caracas, and he was some kind of spokesperson. He wasn't out with a gun, you know, in the jungles of the border area between Colombia and Venezuela.
Yeah, he was the foreign relations minister of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC.
Right. Well, he was not carrying a gun, you know. It wasn't like, in other words, it's people in Florida, for instance. Okay, let's take Florida. Florida has real terrorists running around the streets, people who are trying to overthrow the government of Cuba and the government of Venezuela and also any other government in Latin America that they don't like. And this country harbors them. And this country would be very upset if, Fidel Castro sent people to kidnap Orlando Bosch, who was responsible for the downing of an airplane in 1976 that killed every person aboard, 73 people.
Well,
he's running around in Miami free as can be.
Well, one person's terrorist, of course, is the next person's freedom fighter on either side, but your point is well taken. Now, Chavez became president of Venezuela in 1998. That was during the Clinton administration. Were they as, did they express as many misgivings about him as we have heard since President Bush took office?
Well, he actually, Chavez was elected in 98 and went into office in 99. And I don't know that there was any great uproar at that time about from either President Clinton or President Chavez about relations with each other. President Chavez was just getting his programs off the ground. That was the year they wrote a new constitution, and in that constitution, by the way, it says that health and education are human rights that should be free for all the people. And there were various other things, of course, in that constitution which upset some people on the right in Venezuela, who owned the media and so on. But anyway, he was just beginning. So, and Clinton was out in 2000, at the beginning of 2001. So they did not have much of a relationship at all. I mean, basically, Washington has tended to ignore Latin America unless there is some big problem arising, as you know.
Well, in the case of Venezuela, of course, there's also the oil issue, and we'll get back to that in a moment. But is Chavez modeling his government on Castro's?
What they're doing, he says, I was down there, you know, in December. I went down as the cultural ministry in Caracas. And this idea, by the way, began with Cuban and Venezuelan artists and intellectuals meeting in January of last year. And they thought what a nice idea it would be to have hundreds of artists and intellectuals come down to Venezuela for a conference about what Venezuela is trying to do. And so in December, more than 300 people from around the world gathered in Venezuela, and I happened to be lucky enough to be one of them. And we spent several days studying the situation. We went out to the barrios where we saw the health and education missions that they have set up and the Cuban doctors and so on. There are more than 18,000, by the way, now, Cuban doctors and 1,000 students from Venezuela are studying in medical schools in Cuba, and some of them will be coming back this year to start treating their own people. But anyway, we studied this situation, and the thing is that as far as the actual modeling, Venezuela has quite a different situation. For instance, these missions are very much like Cuban's family medical clinics, but the Cuban doctors are finding things that they never find in Cuba anymore, like people who've never had a medical exam and diseases that should have been treated long ago, people on the verge of dying from things they should not be dying from, that kind of thing. But as far as ideology goes, there's a similarity. President Chavez is now saying they have a socialist system, but he is a Christian, and Fidel Castro is not a Christian. There are differences, and he says there are differences. Chavez is very quick to say there are differences, but what they have is cooperation on a certain level, and that's what he wants for all of Latin America.
Wait, we have to take a little break. When we come back, let's talk about how that cooperation would work, and also talk about the repressive aspects of some of Castro's regime. He has been criticized by human rights organizations for throwing opponents into jail. Will that happen here, or will Chavez keep on allowing free elections? I know that there have been some new laws that have alarmed some people. My guest is Jane Franklin, author of Cuba, Cuban Foreign Relations, and Cuba and the United States, also an editor and contributing editor for Cuba Update, the magazine of the Center for Cuban Studies in New York. We are talking about the warming relations between Cuba and Venezuela and what that means for the rest of the Western Hemisphere. Stay with us. We're back with Underreported today, looking at warming relations between Venezuela and Cuba and what that means for the United States, and whether the United States actually is getting actively involved in changing the situation because Venezuela has claimed that the United States is involved in plots to assassinate its president, Hugo Chavez. With me is Jane Franklin, who is a historian who specialized in Cuba. And when we left, I asked you about whether this new regime might become more repressive. There are new media laws in Venezuela that have some concern. Are they the sorts of things that we've seen in Cuba, where there is no freedom of press and political opponents are thrown in jail?
Let me get to the bottom of that too, Leonard. Freedom of the press and people being thrown in jail. Okay. Washington, not the whole United States, but Washington, ever since the revolution on January 1st, 1959, has wanted to change that regime. They've been after a regime change in Cuba. It has been a state of siege with the trade embargo, the travel ban, and so on. Things have only gotten worse in the last few years, not better. Meantime, Cuba has not ever done anything that threatens the United States. So there's an uneven relationship there. And if you could imagine a country as much larger and more powerful as this country, sitting 90 miles out in the Atlantic or the Pacific, and threatening us constantly, can you imagine what would be happening here? I mean, look what's happened since 9/11, when 20 people, 19 actually that day, slammed two airplanes and two others into targets here. That has set off a whole chain of events that has changed this country radically.
But many people are upset about changes, the Patriot Act and the like. Mm-hmm. Still, when Fidel Castro throws opponents into jail, as he did recently, bring on an outcry from all over the world, not just the United States, there are causes for alarm. We've had people leave the country in rafts to get away so that they could enjoy freedoms that they are denied in Cuba. Cuba may very well have been put under particular hardship because of the embargo, but Cuba has its own repressive problems, has in the past. I remember speaking many years ago to Reynaldo Arenas, subject of a film, and he said one day a general came to his home and said, get up and walk across the room. The general decided that he looked like he was a homosexual, and he wound up in a prison camp as a result. That has nothing to do with whether the United States has been opposed to Fidel Castro since 1959. So there are real issues that I think are of concern to anyone who believes that people should be allowed to express themselves. And I guess the concern here is that now, on December 14th in 2004, Venezuela dealt a severe blow to judicial independence by packing the country's Supreme Court with 12 new justices.
Well, let's go back to Cuba a minute here. That business about homosexuals was in the 60s and is over. That is no longer at all true in Cuba, and that should be recognized.
And they have a new leader named Fidel Castro.
No, they have the same leader, that's right, and he's changed his views too on that, I'm quite sure. However, you must understand, or people must understand, that when you're under this kind of threat from outside, it does have an effect domestically. It's having an effect here domestically. If the United States would stop the state of siege, then Cuba would be allowed to be Cuba, and that's all Cuba wants. Cuba wants to be allowed to be Cuba. Now, as far as Venezuela goes, Venezuela wants to be allowed to be Venezuela. Now, President Reagan can appoint all these judges that he wants, and the Congress can try to stop them, but he's going to get his court. His court voted for him to be president in 2000, and he's going to have more judges like that. It won't be 5-4. It'll be something more like 7-2 by the time he leaves office. Now, that could be called packing the court, but that's Venezuela's affair. It's not up to the United States to be telling these other countries that we're going to change your government if you don't do such and such. They don't tell the United States that. Washington tells them that. They don't tell Washington that. What people want is some kind of equal relationship
Wait. So, Jane Franklin, you're saying that you do believe that the United States is involved in these alleged attacks, plots to assassinate Hugo Chavez?
Well, let me say this. I don't know whether they are or not right now, but, okay.
Is anything specific here? Have there been attempts?
Let me say, Leonard, in 1998, Chavez was elected. In 2000, there was another election called for by the new constitution. He was elected overwhelmingly then. In 2002, there was a coup. And Eva Golinger, this professor in New England, got some documents declassified just before December, because they'd been declassified just before I got down to Venezuela in December, showing that the CIA definitely knew that that coup was going to happen in April of 2002, and they did not warn Hugo Chavez about it. They kept quiet. I don't know whether they had anything to do with it specifically or not, but they knew it was going to happen, and they told Washington that it was going to happen. Washington didn't do the stately thing to do there, which would be to say, if you were a friend of the government, okay, there's this group of people that's planning to overthrow you in a few weeks. Washington didn't do that. The coup happened. The people put Chavez back into power. Then the same people that engineered the coup engineered a huge oil strike because they controlled the oil company there then. They don't now. And that lasted for months and devastated the economy for a while there. Hugo Chavez's government survived that, and then they demanded a referendum. He won that overwhelmingly. Now, there's an elected government, but you've got in her confirmation hearing, Condoleezza Rice said that for even elected governments, should be held accountable to the world. In other words, it's not enough to be elected. You've got to follow the United States rules, or you go out. So I mean, it doesn't matter if you're elected. And so the fact that the United States supported that coup, and remember, I shouldn't name, I guess, newspapers here, but remember the newspapers here. Supported that coup until suddenly it was over, and then they said, uh-oh, we're sorry. It shouldn't have been done. It wasn't democratic. But if they support a coup, then they can support anything. And I don't know what they're doing about assassination. It wouldn't be the first time. I mean, this government has a tendency to overthrow somehow any elected government in Latin America that it doesn't happen to like Guatemala, Chile, the Dominican Republic. You know, it doesn't, Brazil. So, you know, being elected is no guarantee in this government that you're going to survive Washington's anger.
My guest is Jane Franklin, who's the author of a number of books on Cuba and Cuban-American relations. We are talking about Cuban-Venezuelan-American relations now, and this is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. It is our underreported segment, which we broadcast every Thursday at this time. There is a number of treaties were signed between Cuba and Venezuela. One of them was the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, which is an extradition treaty. Sounds similar to others we've seen around the world. But people are concerned because it makes Cuban exiles who are living in Venezuela vulnerable.
Well, actually, unless they've committed some kind of crime, President Chavez is not likely to make them leave the country. You understand? Let me say this. When that plane was blown up in 1976, the people who had done that were captured right away, thanks to Cuban intelligence. Four people. They were held in Venezuela. Military tribunals tried them over and over again. Venezuela held them, was going to release them, but the international outcry was too great, so it kept holding them for many years. This happened in 1976. Now, by the way, one walked out of jail thanks to a bribe from the Cuban American National Foundation, and another was pardoned later and came to this country. That was Orlando Bosch. The other one was Luis Posada, who's still carrying on counter-revolutionary activities in Central America. But anyway, Venezuela then held those people and would not send them back to Cuba, though Cuba wanted them back to try them there. And now, if somebody blew up a plane and killed 73 people aboard, I think, yes, President Chavez would send them back to Cuba.
But that it doesn't then lead to the idea that anybody who Cuba asks for will be sent back.
I don't think it does at all.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. Jane Franklin is the author of Cuba, Cuban Foreign Relations, A Chronology, 1959-1982, and also Cuba and the United States, A Chronological History. She was an editor and contributing editor for Cuba Update, the magazine of the Center for Cuban Studies here in New York. And I thank you so much for contributing to our underreported series.
It's been a pleasure, a real pleasure.